William and the Lost Tourist. William set out joyously to join his companions. They had made no plans for this particular holiday afternoon. They usually left things to fate, and fate seldom failed to provide them with an exciting programme. They'd arranged to meet at the corner of the road that led to Ginger's house. William was early, and there was nothing to be seen at the corner but a car, and in the car were a weeping young woman and a sleeping old man. William stood and gaped. The weeping young woman was astonishingly beautiful, and William, in spite of his professed scorn of the feminine sex, was very susceptible to beauty. William blinked and coughed. The young woman turned sapphire-blue swimming eyes to him and gulped. "Say, kid," she said with an American twang that completed the enslavement of William. "Say, kid, what's the name of this little old town?" William was too much confused to reply for a moment. During that moment, fresh tears welled up into the blue eyes. "I've lost the way, and I've lost the map, and I don't know where I am, and Pop's gone to sleep, and I don't know where I've got to."
"Where did you want to get to?" asked William.
"Stratford," said the lady. "Stratford-on-Avon, that Shakespeare guy's place. If we don't do it today, we'll never do it. Everyone I know has done it, and to go back home and say, 'I've not seen Stratford,' well, I'll never hold my head up again. Never."
She ended in a sob that reduced William's already melting heart to complete liquefaction.
"It's all right," he said consolingly.
It was only a vague expression of comfort, but the lady looked at him, her eyes suddenly alight with hope.
You mean that this is Stratford? Oh, how dandy! Do you really mean that?"
Stronger and older characters than William would have decided to mean that when fixed by those hopeful blue eyes.
Yes," said William, after a moment's struggle with his conscience. "This is Stratford, all right."
The lady leapt in her seat. Gone were all traces of tears.
"Oh, say, kid, I just adore you. Now, I've got to see it all, just as quick as I can. Oh, never mind Pop. He can go on sleeping. He hates looking at things anyway."
She opened the door and jumped out.
"Now, the first thing I want to see is Anne Hathaway's cottage. Can you direct me to that? Or, say, are you doing anything particular this afternoon?"
"No," said the unscrupulous William, deciding that Ginger, Henry, and Douglas could get on very well without him.
"Well, now, would you be a real cherub and personally conduct me?"
"Yes, I would," said William.
If this vision wished it to be Stratford, it was Stratford. They set off down the road together.
"Is it far?" said the fair American eagerly.
William began to consider. He realized that he'd embarked upon an adventure that would require careful handling. He looked up and down the road.
"Whose cottage did you say?" he said.
"Anne Hathaway's."
No, it's not far now," said William, hoping for the best.
The lady became confidential. She told him that her name was Miss Burford, Sadie Burford, and that she just loved this little old country. But Stratford was the thing she longed most passionately to see, and wasn't it just the cutest little place, and she'd be grateful to him all her life. They turned the bend in the road, and there, in front of them, was Mrs. Maloney's cottage. Mrs. Maloney was very old, very cantankerous, and one of William's ancient enemies. Miss Burford gave a little scream of ecstasy.
"Oh, Thatched!" she said. "This must be Anne Hathaway's cottage."
Yes, this is it," agreed William, torn between relief at having discovered an Anne Hathaway's cottage and consternation at the prospect of an encounter with Mrs. Maloney.
He could see Mrs. Maloney looking out of the window. William, as an artist, occasionally overreached himself.
And there's Anne Hathaway looking out the window," he said carelessly.
"Oh, doesn't Anne Hathaway still live here?" said Miss Burford excitedly.
"Well, I thought that was what you said," said William.
"Oh, but I meant the one that lived hundreds of years ago."
"Well, she'll be dead by now," he said, after a slight pause.
"But if she wanted an Anne, whatever it was, she should have it."
"There's another one living there now," he went on.
"Oh, how dandy! A descendant, I suppose."
Yes, that's what she is."
"Well, I've got to hurry. Will you knock or shall I? Perhaps you know her."
Yes, I know her all right. You don't want to go right in, do you?"
"I sure do,"
asserted Miss Burford.
"Well, I wouldn't if I was you. She's awful bad tempered, Mrs. Maloney is. What you said is."
"Oh, but I must go in. People do, I know."
"Better not," said William desperately. She's deaf, too."
"But I can shout."
"Oh, that's no use. She can't hear shouting. And she's mad, too. She's sort of forgotten her name. She sort of thinks she's someone else. So it's no use going in, what with her being deaf and mad. It's not really safe.
But I've known people who've gone inside, persisted Miss Burford. It can't be very dangerous.
And she advanced boldly and knocked at the door. The door opened a few inches, and Mrs. Maloney's wrinkled face appeared round it. At the sight of William, it became distorted with rage.
Ah, you little pest, ye!
William was on the point of turning to flee when he saw Miss Burford slip something into Mrs. Maloney's hand, at which Mrs. Maloney's wrath simmered down to a sullen distrust.
Could I, said Miss Burford with disarming sweetness, could I just look at your hysterical cottage, Miss Hathaway?
Hysterical yourself, snapped the owner. And me name's Mrs. Maloney, I'd have you to know.
Miss Burford turned to William with a sad smile.
Poor woman, she whispered.
Then she entered the kitchen. Mrs. Maloney watched her guest suspiciously as Miss Burford looked round at the old dresser and the flagged floor with a sigh of rapture.
Oh, how lovely! How perfect!
Mrs. Maloney's suspicions deepened.
Then Miss Burford looked rather puzzled. I've seen photographs of it. I had an idea there were more things in it somehow.
Oh, there was, said William. But they had to take 'em away when she got like this.
Eh?
Said Mrs. Maloney sharply.
What's he saying?
Oh, nothing,
said Miss Burford, and began to edge hastily towards the door. Mrs. Maloney, purple-faced, uttered a threatening sound, and Miss Burford, throwing dignity to the winds, followed William's already fleeing figure.
Oh, how awful, she panted when they'd reached the safe refuge of the road. Poor woman, she's sure plumb crazy. But I've seen it, that's all I wanted to do, and now I don't care how soon Pop takes me home. Oh, I've not brought my guidebook, but I reckon there's other things I ought to see in Stratford.
She looked across a field and caught sight of the stream that made its sluggish way through William's native village.
Oh, the Avon, she said, with an ecstatic sigh. Isn't it just dandy? Oh, but now say, kid, isn't there anything else I ought to see belonging to Shakespeare? I suppose there aren't any other of his folks about the place, kind of descendants, you know?
The beautiful sapphire eyes fixed on William. Before he knew what he was saying, he had said modestly, Oh, there's me. I'm one of his folks. He was secretly aghast when he heard himself say that, but he merely continued to gaze at her with his most ingenuous expression.
Well, now, isn't that just luck? You're one of his descendants? Oh, but not in the direct line, I reckon.
If William was going to be a descendant at all, he was most certainly going to do the thing properly.
Oh, yes, he said, I'm direct, all right.
Fancy, said Miss Burford. Well, I reckon you've got letters and records and relics at your house.
Oh, yes, no end of them, all over the place.
Miss Burford thrilled visibly. She looked at William almost with reverence.
I can see a most distinct likeness. What's your name?
William.
Of course. After him. Of course.
At that minute, Ginger and Henry and Douglas appeared. They stood in a row, gazing with interest at William's new friend.
Oh, friends of mine, he introduced them laconically.
Miss Burford turned to them.
I'm just congratulating William on his famous ancestor.
William was never one to grudge honours to his friends.
They're all famous descendants, too, he said graciously.
William's acquaintance with classical poets was limited, but he did his best.
Ginger's Scots, and Douglas's Wordsworths, and Henry's...
He left the realm of poets in disgust for one with which he was more familiar.
Henry's Nelson's.
Miss Sadie Burford had come over to England with the firmly fixed impression that it was a country in which anything might happen, and her expectations were being gloriously fulfilled.
Well, I'm just thrilled. Now we're all going to William's home, where he's going to show me some of those wonderful relics.
William was rather pale as they walked along the road with her.
I thought we'd go round home by the longer way, he said, so as to get a better view of the Avon.
What's the Avon? Said Henry innocently,
and yelled with unnecessary loudness when William kicked him. At last the party came within sight of William's house.
Here's William's house, said Ginger, leading the way to the gate.
Just a minute, said William. I've just remembered that they've hid away those, what you said.
Relics?
Yes, that. Well, they've hid 'em away, case of burglars.
Oh, what a pity. But I must just go in and have a look, just so that I can tell them about it way back home.
And determinedly she went up to the front door and rang. Mrs. Brown herself came to the door.
Oh, good afternoon, said Miss Burford as she entered the hall, followed by the boys. You'll pardon me, I'm sure, for intruding like this, but I simply had to see the house where the family lives now, though I understand that all the relics are put away for safety. Mrs. Brown gazed at her in open-mouthed amazement. Oh, I sure see the likeness to the great man and your little boy. I suppose you haven't kept the name, as a surname, I mean. What is your name?
Brown, stammered William's mother, who was wondering whether or not to ring up the police at once.
Oh, but Shakespeare as well, I'm sure, went on Miss Burford, placing a hand on William's tousled head. As a Christian name, I mean. It's William Shakespeare Brown, I'm sure. Oh, it's so good of you to let me come here, standing in the very house where his direct descendants live.
Mrs. Brown sat down weakly in a chair.
I must fly now, went on Miss Burford. Oh, goodbye. It's been a real honor for me to stand here in this house talking to you. I shall tell them all about it way back home.
And she went off, gaily calling back farewells and thanks as she went. William hastily followed her, murmuring something about seeing her off, leaving Mrs. Brown to demand explanations from the other outlaws, whose professed ignorance she regarded with deep distrust. When William and Miss Burford reached the car, Pop was just waking up.
What? Where are we?
At Stratford, Pop, darling, said his daughter.
Oh, seen it? Got it ticked off?
Oh, sure. I've had a real grand time.
Well, come on then. Let's get back to London for dinner.
She got in beside him, smiling brightly.
Oh, say, kid. She slipped something into William's hand. Buy yourself some candy.
And they were gone. William stood in the middle of the road watching the cloud of dust till it had vanished. Then he stared almost incredulously at the 10-shilling note he held. He had decided on his course of action when he reached home. Mrs. Brown had recovered slightly, but she was still curious and suspicious.
I felt she might become violent any minute and murder us all, she said. William, who was she, and why on earth did you bring her here?
I don't know who she was, except that she said she was called Miss Burford, and I didn't bring her, she just said she wanted to come.
But why?
Well, you heard her talking. She just kept going on like that. Anyway, I think I better go and do my holiday homework now, because I want to get on and get good marks next term and not waste your money and all that.
The startling nature of this last announcement deprived Mrs. Brown of the power of speech. William retreated to the morning room and sat down at the table with a book. After a few minutes, he opened the door cautiously. He could hear his mother talking to his sister Ethel. She was quite young, but absolutely mad, raving. I wanted to ask William more about it, but he's doing his homework, and I don't like to disturb him. William closed the door again, silently, opened the morning room window, lightly vaulted into the garden, and sauntered down to the gate. There he found Ginger, Douglas, and Henry. He took his 10-shilling note out of his pocket and held it up. Ginger, Douglas, and Henry turned head over heels in the road with delight. William climbed to the top rung of the gate and looked down at them.
"Friends, Rome, and countrymen, lend me some ears," he began. Then, proudly and self-consciously, through his nose, "Say, kids, you're plumb crazy."
When Miss Burford returned home, she gave a little lecture on her English travels. She told of her visit to Anne Hathaway's cottage, whose present occupant was very old and suffering from senile decay. She told how in the same town she met four boys, one a descendant of Shakespeare, another a descendant of Scott, another a descendant of the poet Wordsworth, and the fourth a descendant of Nelson. It was wonderful, wasn't it? Her lecture was a great success. That Christmas, one Christmas card was sent to William that never reached him. It was sent from America, and it was addressed to Master William Shakespeare Brown, Stratford-on-Avon, England.